This is Why Small Business Matters from Northumbria University, supporting small businesses with the Help to Grow Management Programme.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Why Small Business Matters. In this special episode, we're on tour in South Yorkshire. I'm Associate Professor Alexandra Anderson from Sheffield Business School, Sheffield Hallam University, seeing how their Help to Grow Management course has helped one company accelerate their business growth. In today's episode, we talk about inclusivity from a social and economic perspective. I'm thrilled to be joined by Laura Winson, co-founder of Zebedee, an inclusive talent agency based here in Sheffield. Zebedee is a real disruptor, challenging the way disability, visible difference and gender identity are represented in fashion and the media. We'll hear more about Zebedee, how it all started and the opportunities and challenges of creating a truly inclusive company. We'll explore Laura's views on how small businesses can develop a more inclusive recruitment and retention strategy. So, welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You started your business in 2017 and the business idea came about whilst walking on the beach with your sister-in-law?
Yeah, sure. So by background, I'm a social worker and my sister-in-law is a performing arts teacher working with people with disabilities. And I was on maternity leave. I went to visit Zoe. We had a little walk on the beach, took the dogs for a walk, and we were just having a chat about the lack of representation in the media, the lack of opportunities for people with disability. And it was literally a light bulb moment that we had there on the beach. We just kind of were like, do you know what? Should we set up an agency and try and change that? Try and encourage people to be more inclusive for their casting and to try and open up more opportunities, primarily for the people that we knew, but also, of course, the wider disabled community, and the rest is history, really.
So how did it actually then all start? How did you get the business set up?
So straight after the walk, we went home. We went to my mother-in-law's house, and we told my husband and the family, like, oh, we've had this idea, we're going to set up a business, and everyone looked at us like, okay, are you crazy? Like what? Like what's going on in your mind? Neither of us, you know, had run a business before. Neither of us had definitely never run a modelling agency before. We did a quick Google search to see if there's anybody out there doing what we were doing, and we quickly found it wasn't really very commonplace what we were doing. Pretty much nobody had really thought about being inclusive in the modelling industry. Got in touch with the company's house, set up a company, and just started everything from scratch. We had to learn, like we are still learning. We've learned every step of the way, but we reached out to the people that we knew and got some really nice images of them as our initial models. We plagiarized model agency contracts that we'd seen before and kind of got our head around what a contract needs to look like. We got in touch with friends that we knew in the creative industries to help us set up a website. In fact, because I was alumni of Sheffield Hallam University, they were very kind and offered me a small grant to be able to buy a laptop and pay for some website and IT stuff. And then the rest of it was just, we picked up the phone and we reached out to everybody we possibly could think of. Like, we just started to try and draw up business. We had no idea, we didn't have a Rolodex of all the names in the business. We still don't. It's very, very hard to kind of make contacts in this business. We were literally picking up the phone and ringing Marks and Spencer's customer service and saying, can you put me through to the casting team? We were just ringing everybody, and we went on Instagram, reached out to everybody we could possibly think on Instagram. We set up our social media pages. And, you know, I was on maternity leave, so I did kind of, when my baby was sleeping, I had time to be doing that. And Zoe was just working evening, so we both had a little bit of time in the daytime to kind of do a bit of work and try and get the ball rolling with the business. But, you know, this first 6 months, it was just all prep. It was just all hard work for no gain, really. You know, for no financial gain anyway. We could see that we were developing a great idea and having great models, and but it was very, very hard to start getting those first bookings. The industry had never booked disabled people before. They couldn't get their head around it and still happens, you know, some clients still can't understand what it means to be inclusive. But those early days were very, very hard. But we did start to get a steady stream of bookings coming in, which eventually got to the point where I left my job because I went back. I was on maternity leave. I returned to work for about 6 months and I was like, actually, I can't do both. I'm going to, you know, something's got to give. And so I left my job and then, yeah, started doing this. And then it's just grown and grown and grown.
So you started with, there was the two of you in those kind of early days. Where are you now in terms of size and headcount?
We're at 12 people working with us. So there's myself and Zoe. Very early on, we laugh about this, my colleague Sue. I put on my Facebook page, oh, is anyone available to do like a couple of hours admin work? Like just need a little bit of extra support. And then very quickly, Sue ended up doing like full-time work. And she's manager now, business development manager. And along the way, we've kind of done that. Like, oh, it's been quite a family business, really. We've had quite a few family members working for us and still working for us. Dom is my cousin's partner. We've had one of Zoe's cousins working for us. We've got my sister, Vic, who manages the Australia and America team. She's based in Australia. But again, Vic was the same. Vic, do you mind? I think she was on maternity leave. Do you want to pick up a couple of hours whilst you're on maternity leave? Whilst the baby's sleeping? And again, she switched, quickly went to full-time, like managing the really busy desk out there. But yeah, of course, we've like absolutely grown. We came out of lockdown just busier than ever. Just so, so busy. We did a lot of work in lockdown. Obviously, people working on shoots, producers, casting teams, they weren't working. There wasn't really, shoots weren't taking place. So they had a bit of time on their hands. So we took the opportunity to do free training sessions on inclusive casting. We were doing Zooms and we were running out of space. We had 100, you can get 100 people. I think we were so tight that we hadn't paid for like an upgrade on Zoom. But we were just running out of space, people logging in to see how to do this. And then we came out of lockdown, like just something clicked in the public's perception. I think it was partly due to the hard work that we did, but I think lockdown also made people think a bit more about vulnerable people, about the importance of being kind. There was Black Lives Matter that happened in the middle of it. Again, people thinking about diversity and how to be more inclusive and less discriminatory. Something seemed to click, and since then it's just been super, super busy, and the team grew like threefold since then.
So Sheffield, we both love Sheffield, and you know, I'm coming from over the Pennines because I'm originally a Salford girl, but you know, been in Sheffield a long while, and I know that you're very much attached to Sheffield. So Sheffield is a creative city. Films are made there. It's got a very vibrant music scene. Some excellent bands have come out there. Arctic Monkeys, of course, only just being one. You know, there's a whole digital space, digital creative sector. You establishing Zebedee in Sheffield and being the disruptor in terms of a creative model agency, an inclusive model agency. How much do you think this can really put Sheffield on in the spotlight?
Well, I would love to say it loads. I would love to say it's going to have a huge impact and it's going to be brilliant, you know, for the creative industries in Sheffield. I love Sheffield, but I'll let you into a secret. I was actually born in North Yorkshire. So I'm Yorkshire born and bred, but I've been here, I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else now, over 20 years. I think the thing with Sheffield is it's like, it's a very we don't blow our own trumpet. And maybe this is why I'm giving this answer. It's it's a really creative city and there's loads of creatives here. There's loads of freelancers, independents, small companies. We're not really on the map for being like, if you compare us to Manchester or Leeds, where all the ad agencies are, you know, like we're not really on the map, but I think there's so many creative people. And that's one of the reasons why I love Sheffield, is that we're not all about the swagger and like, you know, big headed and this, that, and the other. We're all understated. We're just like getting on with what we're getting on with, and we're, you know, we're enjoying ourselves. I don't think, like, in terms of what we do, the city isn't set up for it. You know, I don't know what, there's no big, like Manchester, there's, we don't have the fashion brands here. We don't have the big production studios. We do have one, we've opened our office here now. We're based at Park Hill. We've got one of the new commercial units here. We've moved in only just before Christmas. We've literally just moved in. It's a purpose built. So we've got offices upstairs and we have our own accessible studio downstairs. So we've kind of made our own studio. So, I mean, I hope that it does put Sheffield on the map. I hope it makes it easier for people to cast in Sheffield. I hope it makes it easier for people to shoot in Sheffield. We have Warper, one of our neighbours here. Hopefully they'd like to cast some of our talent for their future projects. You know, I really hope so. And I do love Sheffield. So whatever anyone can do to increase its profile, I'll hopefully just be a small part of that.
So at the time you started the agency, I think there's probably approximately 0.01 representation of models with a disability or visible difference. And across the UK, 24% of the UK population have a disability. Can you tell us a little bit more about the models that you represent at Zebedee?
We our main area was to be increasing the representation of people with disabilities, because that was kind of our background and that's where we saw there was a huge gap. And we always say it's like the last taboo, you know, people think about diversity and they don't think about disability for some reason. That's like the last thing that people think about. People think about ethnicity, religion, age, size, and disability kind of just wasn't being considered. So that was our main kind of remit. And within disability, we're talking about visible disabilities, so maybe wheelchair users, people with limb differences, people who are deaf, to hidden disabilities, people who have autism, people who are blind, people with learning disabilities, like people with Down syndrome, people with dwarfism, basically any, it's so varied and encompassing. There's so many different disabilities, but we'll represent people of all different disabilities and needs. And then we started to get applications from people with visible differences. So we had an application from somebody who's a cancer survivor, they had a mastectomy. And we were kind of like, well, it's not a disability, like it doesn't really fit our remit. But then that didn't fit with our values. We were like, well, you know, people with visible differences are also struggling to get representation from the typical agencies, you know. So we decided to take the step to also represent people with visible differences. So that encompasses, yeah, people with mastectomies, people with alopecia, albinism, vitiligo, scarring, burns, yeah, anything which you would see as a visible difference. And then again, moving on from that, we started to get applications from people from the trans and non-binary community, again, struggling to get representation from typical agencies. And so again, we took the step to represent that community as well. So yeah, we very, very varied. And then of course, within that, we take diversity of all forms very seriously as well. So of course, we do have a huge variety of different ethnicities, different sizes, different heights, different backgrounds, different looks. Like, I'm very, very proud. If you go onto our website, our guys look so diverse, so unique. Mm-hmm. And I know that, like, when I do have a little nosy at what our competitors are doing, very often their books look so similar. Everyone is the same height. Everyone is the same size. Everyone has the same length hair. Do you know, like, literally, it's so, and we are really, really varied. So we're really proud of that. And I think it has been refreshing for our clients. And I think we represent around 1,000, I couldn't know off the top of my head, but around about 1,000 models worldwide. We're working in the UK, Europe, the USA, and Australia. So worldwide.
Yeah. So, and you know, taking this message, then, you know, you are a disruptor in your sector. You're working with some big brands, so Gucci, Amazon, you know, Marks and Spencers. So taking this concept, you know, to those big brands as a small company, you know, what were the challenges in doing that?
Yeah, I mean, we've always tried to make people think or encourage people to think that we're a very big company and that we're like, you know, we have kind of, it's obviously been very, very hard. Like, companies still find it hard to understand that they need to be disability inclusive. They don't know the stats that you just quoted there about the how common it is to have a disability, how common disability is. And they, I think because disabled people are excluded from so many areas of society, they are less visible. And then people who are working at these brands think that it's not common and don't see that there's a business case for it and don't see that they should be doing it. And we still have that problem. So we do spend a lot of time educating our clients, reaching out. We do so much reaching out to try and educate and inform people about the importance of doing it and how to do it well. So it has been really, really hard. But I think because we've worked so hard and we are a little bit different to other agencies, the way that because we'd never worked in agencies, we didn't know the rules. Like, people find us, you know, like, we're very, very friendly. We're very, very approachable. We know what we're talking about in terms of disability and difference. We know all of our models. We support all our models. We know them really well. And I think that comes across, it comes across to our clients. And we are able to talk about what value we can offer to them. And we do argue what the business case is to them. You know, I can give examples. We had one of our girls doing, she did a Gucci beauty campaign, Ellie. She's got Down syndrome. She booked this little job. We didn't know what, it was just not a huge paying job, but it was working, doing an editorial for Gucci Beauty and hopefully going to be placed in Vogue. Well, it did get placed in Vogue and it did get placed on Gucci's main Instagram page, and it got near enough a million likes, and it remains their top liked post ever. So for me, if that doesn't argue the business case for being inclusive, then I don't know what else we can do. I don't know what else can be done to argue like how successful being disability inclusive can be. I feel like I've gone on a tangent there, but hopefully that gives you an idea of, yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all, because I think that also then speaks to, it's not just about, you know, recruiting the models for the job. This is all about them from a culture that they may have as an organisation to be looking to maybe recruit others with disability difference into other roles within the company.
This is it. I mean, people often ask me about this, you know, like how do we make our behind the camera teams more inclusive? And I am not an HR expert. Like, that is not something I all I know about is running my agency and encouraging people to be inclusive in front of the camera, you know, and like what that brings to a creative campaign, what that can do for your business, how important it is for the community to feel represented. But at the same time, it's clear that if organizations were disability inclusive behind the camera, if people sitting on the boards had a disability, if people working on creative were disabled, then of course I believe that their campaigns would also be more inclusive, because they've got the disabled community have got a voice from within. So there's so much that organizations need to be doing to be more disability inclusive within their teams. I think I briefly mentioned that disabled people are excluded from so many areas of society in general, including employment opportunities. They're less likely to find employment. And there's just no reason why that should be the case. Like, brands need to think about how they can be more inclusive. I only know a little bit, but I know there's lots and lots of evidence out there to show that brands and organizations are more profitable, the more inclusive that they are. There's so much more diversity of thinking and innovation in organizations that are inclusive. And without thinking about disabled people within your organization, you're missing them out as customers as well. And of course, you've mentioned like 24% of the population has a disability. Why are you ignoring such a huge sector of society that could be your potential customer? But these are indeed all the conversations that we do have with our clients.
The stats do back that up. I mean, the big learning disability survey that MenCap published in 2019, just 23% of working age adults with a learning disability had a paid job. And then similarly, 53% of any person with a disability had lower employment rates. And as you said there, diversity within organisations, again, the evidence shows that drives innovation. If you were advising an SME who is looking to be more inclusive in their recruitment and retention strategy, what would your kind of top three pieces of advice be?
In terms of our models, we've never struggled to recruit any of our models. I think because there was just like an absolute need for something like us to exist. Like there'd been so many people who wanted to get into the industry and then hadn't been able to. They would just face rejection. There was no other agencies that would consider disabled people. So we've found it very, very easy to recruit our models. We face the same challenges as other small and medium size companies in recruiting a disabled team. I'm really, really keen to ensure that our team is also representative of the people that we represent. And I think there's a few things you need to think about. It's going to take longer, probably, to have a recruit a more inclusive work team. You need to think about where and how you are looking to advertise your jobs. And you need to think about how they're written. So just simple things like removing jargon. Like, are you asking for qualifications that you don't actually need just because you think you need them? Can this be done on the job training? Is that going to open it up to more people? But yeah, looking at your job spec and your person specification, making sure that you're putting it out, advertising it in different areas to where you maybe would normally go to different community groups. Have a little research to see what are the job sites that diverse communities would have a look at, and have a little bit more time. And then following on from that, are your companies, the way that you work, are they inclusive? Like, we have hybrid working, as many companies do now, and the option to work from home for the disabled community does open lots of doors. Just as an example, like I said, like our guys, our models have been so much more busier following on from lockdown. And throughout lockdown and COVID, casting teams and production companies and people managing shoots, they were forced to do their casting remotely because you weren't allowed to just have 20 people in a room casting. That just wasn't allowed. So they were forced to do the Zoom casting or Zoom self-tapes, like an audition via a video that you do on your phone. And because of that just opened so many more doors for our guys, because they can't just travel to London. The tubes, if you're a wheelchair user, getting around London is an absolute nightmare. You just can't do it. If you have neurodiversity, like, it's really, really tricky to manage that and manage an audition scenario. And again, I think that's one of the reasons why we were so much more busy, because as we're doing now, this podcast, doing it remotely, it makes it so much more easy for people to access different opportunities.
You're listening to Why Small Business Matters. Find out how Northumbria University can help your business thrive through the Help to Grow Management Programme. delivered by leading small business and enterprise experts from Northumbria University, with the support of leading figures from industry and experienced entrepreneurs. The programme supports senior managers of small and medium-sized businesses to boost their business's performance, resilience, and long-term growth. The 12-week programme is 90% funded by the government, and the fee payable by participants is £750, and has been designed to allow participants to complete it alongside full-time work. The in-depth, high-quality curriculum supports you to build your capabilities in leadership, innovation, digital adoption, employee engagement, marketing, responsible business, and financial management. By the end of the program, you'll develop a business growth plan to help you lead your business to realize its potential. To find out more about the program, the modules, eligibility, and fees and delivery dates, go to northumbria.ac.uk/help-to-grow.
You're listening to Why Small Business Matters. I'm Alexandra Anderson, and today we're talking to co-founder of Zebedee, Laura Winson.
Zebedee continues to grow and grow, working with more models than ever. And you mentioned globally. So, you know, Zebedee has gone international. How did those international market opportunities come about?
So I'd love to say I wrote a business plan, I researched the market, I did all the things that you meant to do, but it kind of happened a little bit by accident. We started to get inquiries from America. We were like, should we have a look at this market? Somebody had mentioned to me about the Department of International Trade offering funding for business trips. So this all happened just before lockdown. I don't know if we'd be where we were now if it wasn't for that. So Zoe and I went on a trip to New York, met with as many clients as we possibly could, run a few casting days, got, 30, 40 models, some images of them so that we could kind of have on our website. And then we came back and just started reaching out to, again, as many, the same as what we did in the UK, reaching out to as many people as we possibly could, like banging on the door, informing, educating. And eventually we start to get those bookings coming through. And then my sister Vic, as I mentioned, I'd asked her to pick up a few hours. So Australia, the time zone is better. So I found I was working like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd respond to email. I was literally working all the time. Oh, this needs doing this. Yeah, you can't manage it. You can't manage an American modeling, because in this industry, everything has to be immediate. Like, I know some industries, like, you get an email, you can reply the next day or the next day. This industry, you reply immediately or you lose the job. Time is of the essence. So I got Vic working a little bit, because in Australia, they're pretty much a day ahead, almost exactly, you know, like a day ahead, but on the same time zone. So she was working in for America, and she was like, do you know what, why don't we just do Australia as well? Because I'm in Australia, it makes sense. So I was like, yeah, let's go ahead and start with Australia. So that's kind of how everything that we have done has always been very, very organic. Like, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this later, but this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do the course, because I feel like I never sat down and read how to run a business book. I've like had an idea and thought, right, I'm going to do this idea. How do I do it afterwards? So that's kind of how I've always done it. And I don't know if I'm meant to say that on a business podcast, but that's kind of like how we've done it.
I don't think you will be alone. with Help to Grow Management, you joined that course. You know, what were the motivations for you then starting on Help to Grow?
A couple of things, and I don't think they're probably the same motivations that many other people would have, but the first thing was kind of just allowing myself to have a bit of time to reflect on we never get time to reflect on what we're doing. We're just, like I said, it's such a speedy industry that we never get time to sit back and like think, actually, this is an achievement, or this has gone wrong. How can we do it better? How can we grow? Giving myself a little bit of time to reflect and also use my brain in a different way is what I was thinking. You know, like I did a degree, I've done a master's, I've always liked to try, like learn and think. And I think, like, because it was just everything had been so reactive and I've just been so busy, I was like, it's actually going to be quite nice to start using my brain in a different way again. So that was one of the motivations. As I just mentioned before, I've never studied business. Well, I did a business GCSE many, like, 100 years ago. But since then, I've never really studied business. I was wondering, am I doing this right? Am I thinking about the right things? Do I need to be doing something differently? Just double checking. And also just having the opportunity to maybe be in a room with other people, maybe in a similar position to me, learn from them. So they were my motivations.
And then in the Help to Grow management cohort, you know, the other people in the room, that they are leaders from SMEs, but not in, you know, you're a niche sector, not in your sector. How was it working with other SMEs from different sectors, you know, different types of companies?
Incredibly interesting. And you do find that not all, but many of them face the same areas of development or issues that I would face as well. I mean, there's a couple of guys that worked in recruitment, and I always say, because I worked in recruitment for quite a while, and so did Sue. This is how we know each other. We worked in the same company many moons ago. And I always say, we are recruiters, but we're just working in this niche recruitment environment. It's exactly the same. It's picking up the phone and reaching out to clients and winning that business, you know, whilst managing your models and managing their expectations and keeping them happy and developing their careers. So it's much the same. So it was nice to kind of meet those guys and learn about how they're doing things. But of course, like, because it's quite structured, the course, you know, and of course we're learning about different things every week, and you can always relate that to something in your business, you know, you can always relate it, as everybody else did. And I think it's just nice. It was nice for me to see that everyone is just like normal people like me as well. Do you know, like, again, like, you know, I'm sure many people talk about imposter syndrome, but it's like, am I doing this right? Am I really running a business? Do you know, like, am I? So it's just nice to see normal people. What I would say is normal people.
So what was the kind of the main learning from you, would you say, that you took from the course?
I mean, there was just so much. I mean, something that sticks in my mind is we did a team session around, we didn't have a vision, mission and values. We'd never kind of got around to doing that. We knew what it was, you know, kind of, because obviously we're such a value driven organization. That's the reason why we exist. So that was kind of quite easy for us. But we'd never sat down as a team and come together and got that in writing. So that was really cool because we managed to get those together. The team put all the ideas together, and then we've made it into visuals as well. So we've got a disabled illustrator to kind of put some illustrations together. So it's kind of made a nice little bit of marketing material for us at the same time, as well as kind of really solidifying for the team what we do and what our value is to our customers and to our clients. So that was really nice. And I think I went into this wanting to learn about how to, like, because we're quite a small team, I really want to have them, I want them to be happy. I want to have a happy team. Yeah. It is a high stress environment. It's a fast environment. So, like, just learning about, like, change culture and just having a nice environment for the team and what we can do, and, like, having a nice workplace and push for high performance in the workplace, but at the same time making people feel valued. That was all really interesting and helpful for me as well.
So Sue is now on the course as well. What's the benefit of having another member of the team go through the course for Zebedee?
Well, I'll be completely honest, we haven't had time to chat about it too much. But we literally, before I got on this call this morning, I told her I was doing this. She's like, oh, because I hadn't even had time to tell her I was doing this. It will be valuable. because of course Sue's learning many of the things, like many, it would be really useful for me to refresh my memory, do you know, like what's we feedback. And it's yeah. always been my plan to, like, when we have team meetings every bi-monthly, so it's really, really, I'm trying to bring one topic per team meeting to the meeting. And having Sue there as well, who's also done the course and also kind of help guide the conversations and train and teach the rest of the team about what we've been learning is really, really helpful. And I think Sue's really been enjoying her mentor as well, and that's kind of helped things move forward. And it's just, and I think she probably joined it for the same sort of reasons that I did, you know, this like, do we know what we're doing, am I doing this right? So it's just developing a more confident member of the team as well, like, and of course like I said, I want the team to feel happy and valued and feel like they've got opportunities, and I think that's really helped Sue in that area as well. But yeah, I'll be, like I said, completely cards on the table. We haven't had much time to chat about it, but it's on our list.
As is the case when one runs a very fast-paced small business. So just to kind of finish off, what's next for Zebedee then? What does the future hold?
Well, hopefully much of the same. I hope, so you gave stats there that 0.01% of the people featured in advertising has a disability. We've had a little look at those stats and they're moving closer to around 2 or 3%, something like that. So of course there's been a huge increase in the past 6-7 years, and we like to think that we've been quite instrumental in making that change. Like I don't watch TV very often, but when I do, if I see a commercial with somebody with a disability, 9 times out of 10 they're one of our talents, so that's a nice feeling. So I hope much of the same. We do, exclusive here, we've got there's a documentary coming out in February next month following our agency and our models. That's on Channel 4, coming out mid-February, called New Model Agency. So we've got a little documentary coming out. So we'll see what happens after that. I've got no idea. But I always say, like, I won't stop pushing until we get to, you know, 20% or so of people featured in advertising have a disability, so it's representative of the society that we live in. So I just hope that you'll continue to see inclusive advertising, inclusive film, inclusive media, and that it won't be a surprise when you see it. It will just be completely seen as the norm. So yeah, that's where we hope to be.
Well, thank you, Laura. That was fantastic. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. But in terms of your passion for driving inclusivity, I do hope that you're able to realise that, and that becomes a reality for us all. So thank you so much for spending your time with us.
No, you're welcome. Thank you so much for listening to me.
And thanks again to my guest, Laura Winson from Zebedee. If you're a company looking to drive inclusivity in your business and wondering where to start, organisations such as Neurodiversity in Business or DFM Project Search, amongst others, can help. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Why Small Business Matters.